This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 15th of October, 2021. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extracts for this week. So we begin with our usual notices. First to say, if you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. The contact number is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And don't forget that if you want to listen to the recording, you can use the buttons to go backwards and forwards to listen to any of the tracks again if you want to. And one more note for those of you with computers or tablets, you can use them by plugging into your computer, or you can go to our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com, and then when you get there you click on News, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. All the recordings are listed in date order. So let's take a look at what is in this week's edition of the Chronicles. Oh, but before that, I will introduce our readers.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Oh, hello.
Hello. Just to prove we're here.
Just to prove we're here. Our readers today are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Peter Lydiard. So the four items, headline items, that we're going to read today are The Church Planned for Demolition, Frustration over Access Issues at Taleza Park, Coach Cancellation Saga Rumbles On, and More Than a Dozen Offers Dismissed. Right, so, Ros, could we have the first headline story, please?
Yes, it's Church Planned for Demolition. A Winchester church, which has stood for almost six decades, will be demolished and partly make way for housing, if the plans go ahead. The Diocese of Winchester is proposing to close and knock down St Luke's Church in Stanmore and build a new place of worship on the same site. It is believed to be the first such scheme in recent years in Winchester. A public notice has detailed that the church, which was built in 1960 to 1961, has been proposed for replacement due to the building's deteriorating condition and the substantial garden, which is too large to be managed. For some years, Winchester City Council has earmarked the garden for a possible site for housing. The parish and the diocese have been working with the authority and housing proposer Footstep Living, who proposed to redevelop the site. If approved, a new place of worship, with a hall and community facilities alongside the housing development with affordable homes, could be constructed. It is unclear whether the church or the city council will pay for the new place of worship. Currently, members of the public and St Luke's congregation are only being asked to comment on the proposed proposal and demolition of the church building existing. The notice details that a suitable building will be available for use in the old church pending the place of worship being developed. Speaking about the church's future were councillors Jamie Scott and Derek Green, who said, "We agree with St Luke demolition and welcome a new church on this site with good community facilities. St Luke's Church has been on this site since 1961, and before that on the corner of Cromwell Road and the Valley, which is the current site of the Sportsman's Club. Many Stanmore residents have a long connection in St Luke Church, whether being married there or buried there or had a loved one's funeral there. Many families would be used to the Stanmore Playgroup, which operated there for many years, and young children would have gone to the youth groups, the holiday clubs, and attended Sunday school. Stanmore folks will have many happy memories of time spent in the St Luke Church. Subject to planning permission, we understand that the new church would need added housing units to ensure the scheme is viable. And we both hope that the local lettings policy connected to the proposed housing units on the site, which mean they are built for people with connections to the local community. This development will again have an impact to social residents living close. By so doing, we both hope the development happens in a sensitive manner. Winchester City Council and the Diocese of Winchester were both contacted for a comment, but neither responded.
Thank you, Ross. Richard, please.
Frustration over access issues to Leisure Park. Criticism is mounting over access to Winchester's new Sport and Leisure Park for those with disabilities and unable to drive. The multi-million pound facility opened in May this year with thousands signing up for membership, but pressure is growing for improved public transport to the centre in Bar End. This week, Winchester City Council announced that it's launching a free travel trial to encourage residents to use the park and ride services to Barfield Close. But for those with disabilities or long-term health issues, this stop is not close enough. Twyford resident Simon Harcourt-Williams has claimed that the council has ignored a promise to have a bus stop at the leisure park. Mr Harcourt-Williams said he's unable to use the centre because he cannot drive due to eye problems and the bus service is not accessible enough. He and others in a similar situation are joining forces to create a pressure group. He continued, "This question of having a bus stop at the sports centre and the importance of it for me is for those who have difficulty walking or those in a wheelchair. The Barfield stop is a long way from the sports centre. It's not sensible. By insisting on the Barfield stop, it feels like I'm dealing with a council who simply do not grasp or understand what disabled means. I'm sick and tired of the council saying we're doing free buses to Barfield when they're missing the point. From Barfield to the sports centre is more than certain people with disabilities can manage. The leisure centre has got a large car park, and if you've got a car, you can go back and forth, it's not a problem. But if you don't have a car, then it is a problem." Mr Harcourt-Williams said that when the River Park Leisure Centre was opened, a number of buses travelled down North Walls, which created easy access. He claimed that acquaintances in the medical profession cannot send their patients to the centre for therapy due to the lack of public transport. "We live in a modern age. We've got to take care of the needy and those that might need to be exercised on doctor's orders. They need the ability to get to and from the sports centre." The free travel trial will run for 4 weeks between Monday, October the 18th to Sunday, November the 14th, meaning residents can catch a Winchester Park and Ride bus between the Broadway and Barfield Close and travel for free just by telling the driver where they're going. The council said the move reflects its commitment to encouraging residents to utilise the city's public transport links to reduce the number of cars in the city centre, as well as enjoying the new leisure park. It added that the reduction in car traffic in the city is also intended to improve air quality. Councillor Martin Todd, Winchester City Council Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "Anyone with a bus car already use the park and ride buses to get to the leisure centre, but this new free offer means everyone can take a bus from the Broadway to the leisure centre and back for free. We're very grateful to Stagecoach for helping to make this trial possible. Making it easier to get down to Bar End will certainly cut congestion in the city centre and cut carbon emissions too."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
This is headed Coach Cancellation Saga Rumbles On. The backlash over National Express stopping coach travel to and from Winchester has continued, with a solution yet to be found. Previously reported National Express has stopped all travel to and from Winchester due to the area where they collected them from, the Broadway, being unsuitable for the coaches. This is because the coaches are required to turn in a tight space at the King Alfred statue stop, which is a busy area. This has left many Winchester residents outraged at having plans cancelled at very short notice, with the nearest stop currently at the University of Southampton. Now, differences of opinion have been shared by local politicians as to who is to blame for the situation. Winchester City Councillor Martin Todd, Cabinet Member for Economic Recovery, said, "Following the introduction of larger coaches, National Express is unable to use the Broadway because of the turning circle the new vehicles require. The City Council has offered National Express a range of alternatives, including the park and ride car parks, and has kept county officers informed of the situation throughout. Winchester is a compact medieval city, and we're looking at a wide range of possible solutions with Hampshire County Council and National Express. The City Council remains absolutely committed to finding a solution so the coach service can resume to and from Winchester." In response, Steve Bryan MP said, "This is deeply regrettable and comes out of the blue for many who will be hugely inconvenienced. Clearly, it was not a surprise for Winchester City Council, who have clearly known about this, failed to make any persuasive case for our city or involve others to help in that regard." Councillor Todd said, "I can understand that Steve Bryan would want to divert attention away from the benefit cuts, fuel crisis and Brexit chaos he voted for, but he really should stick to the facts. Winchester City Council didn't make National Express's coach longer, and that's the main problem. The coaches are now too long to turn in the width of the road. I personally spoke to the director in charge of transport at Hampshire County Council to ask for help finding space to solve the problem. And the City Council will continue to work constructively with Hampshire, National Express and anyone else it needs to until there's a solution." A spokesperson from National Express said, "We are yet to find a solution that meets our operational needs, but are working closely with Winchester City Council to find a replacement stop. All options are being considered against factors including location, accessibility and any resulting changes to the overall route and journey time. We are keen to be able to reinstate the service as soon as possible."
Thank you, Claire. Well, the last of our four headline stories is headed "More Than a Dozen Officers Dismissed." Nearly 20 police officers have been dismissed from Hampshire Constabulary since 2018. Data shows that 13 constables, 2 inspectors and 3 sergeants were let go from the force in the past 3 years. This comes after an inquiry was launched into systematic failures that allowed Wayne Cousins, Sarah Everard's killer, to continue to be a police officer. The list includes officers dismissed for sending inappropriate photographs to a woman, making or failing to challenge racist or sexist remarks, accessing personal data while not permitted to do so, falsely claiming to have a medical condition, working while unfit through drinking, drink driving and dishonesty. The news comes as a police chief has admitted that public confidence must be restored in officers after the murder of Sarah Everard. Martin Hewitt welcomed plans to launch an independent inquiry to look at systematic failures that allowed her killer, Wayne Cousins, to be employed by the Met Police. He said the case had sent shockwaves through every force in the country and described how police felt betrayed by Cousins. Hampshire Police Chief Constable Olivia Pinky said, "We expect all our officers and staff to uphold the highest levels of professionalism and integrity at all times, whether on or off duty, and we do not accept any conduct that does not meet these standards. Policing is built upon the values of professionalism, compassion, courage and integrity, and the public have a right to expect the highest standards from the officers and staff who are entrusted to keep them safe. There is a robust system in place for reporting breaches of professional standards. Not only do we encourage our officers and staff to do so, we know they feel confident that we will take action." If you want to see a full list or hear a full list of dismissed officers, you can visit the Hampshire Chronicle website. Well, those are the four headline stories, and we move on to the death notices, starting with Ros, please.
Yes, these are the death notices for the week ending Friday the 15th of October 2021. Apps. Maureen Apps, also known as Mo, née Elms, born March 6th, 1940, passed away peacefully in her sleep on Tuesday the 30th of September, aged 81.
Baron. Patricia Wendy Baron, née Bustard, passed peacefully on the 30th of September, aged 77, after a long illness bravely fought.
Carvel. Audrey Carvel, passed away peacefully on 9th October, aged 95.
Fremantle, Joan Fremantle, peacefully on the 5th of October, aged 99.
Little, Roberta Jane Little, on the 8th of September 2021, aged 80, of Winnell Winchester, formerly of Mitchell Devastation.
Mary, Patrick Charles Mary, formerly of Alsford, passed away suddenly at home in Waipara, New Zealand, aged 58. On the 27th of August.
Walker, Michael Walker. It is announced with great sadness the death of Mike, who died at home, aged 79 years.
Thank you. Now, Claire, we're going to be working you very hard because you go straight on, please, to reading Christian comment.
That's fine. This is written by Nigel Hemming, who has headed it, Generations. In the early 90s, I joined a band called Fat and Frantic, FAF for short. They were a zany gospel skiffle pop outfit whose music ranged from crazy nonsense to uplifting pop and compassionate protest songs. They had heart and soul, fun and faith, and proved popular among the teens and students. FAF fans were all in, following the band to numerous gigs, joining in the madcap fun, and buying lots of T-shirts. All music has the power to recall and unlock emotion, and over the past decade, the FAF Facebook group has become a safe place for several hundred, now very much older, fans to swap memories and photos and relive their youthful days following the band. One constant discussion revolves around the challenge of persuading somewhat bemused 21st century teenagers to appreciate the magic of a seemingly random band their parents used to follow. During lockdown, one lifelong fan courageously asked the band to reform and play an online gig to raise money for the cancer support charity where she works. It took a few months to organise, but 2 weeks ago we met up to practice the songs, headed to a small studio and proceeded to stream a full-length faff gig live on YouTube. Despite the obvious passing of years and a few misremembered words and chords, the old magic was still there and the die-hard fans were delighted, tuning in from far and wide and generously donating cash. Passing on great music to the next generation feels a bit like passing on faith to your children. You can tell them all about God and share the stories, the adventures, and the cool people you met along the way, but ultimately their relationship with God, like their relationship with a certain band, will need to become their own. My wife Jo and I have always tried to keep things real with our kids as they were growing up. We've shared many of our experiences, told them of answers to prayer and miracles that we have witnessed or heard about. We've also tried to answer their questions as honestly as we can and haven't hidden them from the challenging or disappointing times. We can't force God on any of them, but we've tried to share how very real he is to us and include him in our day-to-day family life. One of our guiding verses comes from Psalm 78. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power and the wonders he has done. Sometimes we assume our grown-up hobbies are irrelevant in our kids' culture, and I'm certainly not trying to be cool, but authenticity seems important to this generation. Me, as a dad, being comfortable in who I am, brings my kids a degree of safety. Sharing my life genuinely with them has meant we have a strong relationship, and so far also seems to have kept them close to God and helped them maintain a passing interest in Fat and Frantic too. And that was written by Nigel Hemming, who is the senior pastor of Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you for that, Claire, and thank you for surviving Rosie's coughing, sneezing fit.
I'm really very sorry. Well. Yes.
Okay. So we move on to letters now, the usual mixed bag, though the first few are about one of our headline stories about the National Express coaches. The first one is written by A. Westlake, headed National Express. Sir, what a devastating blow to the residents of Winchester that National Express coaches will no longer visit the city. Chronicle, September the 30th. This link provided is a very convenient service for Heathrow Airport and also London Victoria for our city residents, and I believe the council should lobby National Express coaches to reintroduce the service. Perhaps in a different location, possibly St Catherine's Park and Ride, or somewhere along Barfield Close, or even the old coach station in Worthy Road. The fact that National Express coaches deem it dangerous to complete a U-turn in the Broadway once every 2 hours with each of its services, when the P&R buses do this 5 times every hour without difficulty, raises some questions. I would implore everyone to raise this with their local councillors, to persuade the council to seek to get this very useful service for all Winchester residents reintroduced. And that was from A. Westlake, Courtney Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
And this one, also about the National Express coaches, is from Brian Scott. Sir, National Express coaches will no longer service Winchester, and I will just have to use my car instead and suffer the wrath of the Extinction Rebellion. National Express regions started with COVID-19, and then reduced demand, and now the U-turn in the Broadway, which they have been performing for many years. If a stop was outside the Discovery Centre, the coach from the south could use St Cross, Southgate Street and the High Street traffic lights, and the St George Street light could be linked to form a smooth flow. Southbound, the stop could be outside Barclays Bank. And that was from Brian Scott of Southgate Street, Winchester.
And Rod Youngman adds to the chorus. I find the National Express coach's reason for no longer serving Winchester because of congestion in the Broadway and finding it difficult to turn their vehicles a lame excuse. They say there are no suitable places in the city to pick up passengers. Why not use Catherine's Park? Or St. Catherine's Park, even. And, Richard, stop it. Why not use... Why not use St. Catherine's Park and ride stop, sorry, once used by stagecoach mega buses, or the top bus stop of the two on Station Hill, which is rarely used. As for a spokesman saying that Winchester people can always use the inconveniently placed Southampton coach station, how do you like to lug heavy suitcases between here and Southampton, only to view Winchester as the coach travels past our city? Rod Youngman, Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Got another one. Bus station at Middlebrook Street. Sir, I was disappointed to read in the Hampshire Chronicle, September 30th, that National Express is dropping Winchester from its routes, and the reason given is the Broadway, where the bus stop is, has become too busy. This is a big blow to affordable, sustainable travel for the city, because the biggest source of carbon emissions in Winchester District is cars, vans and lorries using our roads. The City Council has committed to net zero for the district by 2030, and a bus can take up to 60 cars off the road at any one time. They have a crucial part to play, but we need a frequent, fair bus service that reaches all parts of the district. Buses need a safe space to manoeuvre without risk to people, and a bus station would be ideal. We do have one that serves local buses only, but the council wants to shut it as part of the Silver Hill regeneration. It is probably too small anyway, so I have a suggestion that we convert Middlebrook car park into the new Winchester bus station. The council has consistently reneged on promises to remove city centre parking spaces that encourage people to drive into town. Removing Middlebrook car park to create a sizeable bus station suitable for our future bus needs will go some way to honouring the council's climate commitments. Surely this whole episode just goes to show that Winchester needs a proper bus station that local and national buses can use. The council must think again. And that was from Giles Gooding, Fordington Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but the next letter is not about express buses and coaches. It's written by Martin Waldron, and it's headed Pheasant Shoots, which isn't that easy to say. Sir, I refer to a misleading letter from Mr. Chris Packham and friends regarding pheasants and game shooting, Chronicle September the 30th. Pheasants were introduced many, many years ago, probably by the Romans, long enough since that they can be regarded as native. They can breed in the wild, but as they nest on the ground, fall prey to pests such as rats, foxes, hedgehogs and badgers, and also to winged predators. To produce a reasonable number, eggs are hatched in incubators and released quite soon afterwards. Well, after a day's shooting, the dead birds are collected by a firm of gamekeepers who, after preparation, sell them for consumption. In my experience, having assisted in various shoots over 30 years, only perhaps one bird per 100 is not suitable for consumption due to damage when falling after having been shot. Now, regarding lead shot. Lead has been used for bullets and shot ever since the gun was invented. Much more game was eaten in days past without any apparent harm to the population. The shot used today is produced in such a way as to render it harder than the lead, which is used for roofing and other building purposes. It is made such that it stays intact upon impact and does not disintegrate or deform or contaminate the meat with detached particles. And that was written by Martin Waldron, Main Road, Hursley.
And another change. Answers needed, and this is from Clive Earthy. Sir, in 1990, I was cabin services officer on the BA flight 149, which was allowed to land in Kuwait during the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait, allowing my 386 passengers and crew to be taken as hostages and human shields by the Iraqi invaders for the next 4 to 5 months. The government at that time, shortly after, in 1993, ordered the Royal Military Police to conduct an inquiry report called Operation Sandcastle into that dreadful event. The inquiry findings and results have never been released, despite promises to do so made by successive governments. Would my MP please, under the 30-year rule, raise this matter in Parliament, requesting the release of the report, Operation Sandcastle, into the public domain, as promised by all governments since the 1990s? And that's from Clive Earthy of the Dean, Alsford.
Eunice Stevens asks, why so long? I was keenly interested to read the article in the Chronicle, October the 7th, College Launches Dedicated Bursary Award. It's clearly linked to Winchester College's recent decision to attract a wider range of students in its sixth form, including a number of from far less privileged socio-economic backgrounds than those whose parents can afford the extremely high fees. It's also not the case that day boys and girls have never attended the college before. I must admit to being surprised to read the caption that football played a big part in Nazir's time at Winchester, given that Millfield School holds the elite rank of being held the leading sports public school in the UK. Nor was I sure what the photos accompanying the article, presumably provided to you by the college, were trying to encapsulate. So, poor publicity in my mind. Whilst it's highly laudable that the college has given its founder's name to the new bursary scheme, we must bear in mind that William of Wykeham founded his colleges in Winchester and Oxford to educate scholars. I have to wonder why this ambitious scheme has taken so long in coming to fruition. Who is funding it and for what purpose? There's much more waiting to be unravelled here. Eunice Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
This, excuse me, this letter is headed Parking Fine. I am 80 years old, recently had a hip replacement and am currently awaiting a knee replacement. Crippled with arthritis and in constant pain, I am forced to move slowly. Aldi is my preferred store for quality, price and pleasant, helpful staff. I try to shop there at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. to park near the door. As shopping is so difficult for me, I try to do one big shop. With my mobility problems, this can take some time, especially if I forget something and have to go back around the shop. Packing the car also takes me a while, plus returning the trolley. I was horrified to receive notice of a parking fine, as I was completely unaware that I had overstayed the allotted time. Shopping is stressful enough without somehow having to keep an eagle eye on the length of time I have been parked. It seems I had overrun by 20 minutes. I live alone and my only income is my pension, so even paying the reduced £40 represents a lot of groceries. There is no possible way I can guarantee completion of my shopping inside an hour. So Aldi will lose a good, regular customer, as I am forced to go across town to Sainsbury's or Tesco, where the parking limit is less draconian at 2 hours. I understand that space is limited, but it seems sensible to increase the parking time to 90 minutes. Even I can squeak by in that time, and Winchester is full of old codgers like me. Meanwhile, I have alerted all my equally ancient friends to this current unfortunate situation. Frieda Bates, Western Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
This next letter is headed Wood Smoke and it's written by Hazel Agombar. Sir, I read with interest Dr. Chowdhury's response published in the Chronicle to my letter about log burners, letters September the 30th. Analysis of his arguments suggest that he has either fallen hook, line and sinker for the Stove Industry Alliance's marketing campaign, or benefits themselves from wood-burning industry's very profitable business. The Stove Industry Alliance website, which Dr. Chowdhury suggests we visit, does not contain reliable, independent information. Why would it? Its purpose is to sell stoves. In fact, the negative health effects from residential wood smoke have now been documented in hundreds of scientific studies. Even the newest log burners generate vast amounts of pollution compared with heat sources such as gas boilers, for example. According to DEFRA, when compared with gas, wood burning produces 400 times more particulates, 100 times more carbon monoxide, and 3.5 times more nitrogen oxides. Wood smoke also contains cancer-causing dioxins, formaldehyde, benzene, and arsenic. Now, this may come as a shock to some people because over the last 10 years or so, the wood burning industry has been very successful at persuading us that wood stoves are a green source of heating. The truth is that burning wood for fuel is neither healthy nor eco-friendly. It destroys vital ecosystems and carbon sinks while releasing carbon that has been stored by the tree for 50 years or more. In the timescales we have for carbon emission reduction, burning wood for fuel is harmful. As for other sources of pollution, I can put Dr. Chowdhury's mind at rest. I have monitored indoor air quality and consequently swapped our gas hob for an electric one. I have also noted very short-lived spikes in particulates when we use the toaster. It is nothing compared to the sustained increase of particulates measured inside our home when we can smell wood smoke outside. These worrying observations are made by a growing number of people in the UK who suffer from the impact of residential wood burning. For far too long, we have been duped. Or is it duped? We have been harming ourselves and the climate, thinking we are doing the right thing. The scientific evidence is overwhelming, and we're waking up to the facts. That was written by Hazel Agombar, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
This one is Lido Welcomed. Sir, while some are floating the idea of a Lido, as with other proposals, it goes nowhere near thinking outside the box. Chronicle, October 7th. What is needed is imaginative big thinking to grasp the opportunity to really put your Winchester on the national map with a national conference centre, a helipad, a hotel and a restaurant. This will broadcast that Winchester is here for political and business conferences, exhibitions and the like, bringing national attention to Winchester and money into the local economy. Scrap everything and begin again. And that's from Roger Davey of Blue Ball Hill, Winchester.
And on the same subject... Regarding the call for a Lido on the site of the River Park Leisure Centre, I would like to point out that the swimming pool at River Park is suspended above ground due to, I believe, there being an ancient burial ground there. Is what I was led to believe when I worked at the centre. Sue Atkins, Gosport Road, Privet, Alton.
And another one. Ray the Lido. This is a plan that all parties should support to make it a reality. The word Lido is derived from a resort outside Venice where there was a beach pool. Lidos are often filled with salt water, easier for beginners to stay afloat and is hygienic. Personally, I think it is a splendid idea. Open-air swimming is becoming more popular and indeed healthy. On a recent walk around Winnell Moors, there were few people swimming in the River Itchen. Let us hope that all parties in WCC and HCC will work together to make this idea a reality. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
Thank you, Claire. And the last letter is written by somebody who is well known to all of us here and maybe to you at home. It's written by Jane Harding. And the letter is also very poignant for a reason which will become clear as I read it. It's headed Theatre History. Sir, thank you so much for the fascinating history of theatre in Winchester last week, especially the Cheswell Theatre, Chronicle, October the 7th. I love the description of the first theatre in the square smelling of carnage. We were reminded that the actors were all male, of course, especially during the link with the Mechanics Institute. When we moved to Winchester in 1984, I was very excited to visit the Cheswell Theatre. However, the first play I saw was Same Time Next Year, performed by Ros Lydiard and Malcolm Brown. The acting was so good, I came out despondent and convinced that I would never act here. Luckily, I have since performed in some wonderful plays. However, this year has been particularly uplifting after the closure during the pandemic. First, there was the beautiful open-air Midsummer Night's Dream in Wolvesey Palace. Then a superbly performed Mind Game, directed by the same Roz from 36 years ago. To continue the excitement last week were stunning performances in the brilliant competition-winning Take 10 Plays. Although I may be left feeling once again that my acting days are over, I can really look forward to this season, starting with Dracula in November. The future plans for the Cheswell expansion are also hugely exciting, with the possibility of studio performances, a rehearsal space, junior theatre and visiting plays. The thought of not having to climb a rickety ladder to access costumes in the tower is also very positive. So, thank you, Barry Sherlock and Lisbeth Rake, for the delightful history, and the Cheswell Theatre for continuing to inspire and maintain such a high standard behind the little red door. And that's written by Jane Harding, Backstreet, St Cross, Winchester. Right, thank you one and all. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Or you could even drop into their office when you're in Winchester. So we move on now to editorial comment, read this week by Richard, please.
Thank you. Sports Centre Access and Future of Church. Local authorities always have to face making difficult decisions, balancing a myriad of factors as they attempt to improve the lives of the residents of their district. Sometimes they get things right, sometimes not. The City Council has opened a fantastic new sports centre at Bar End that is proving hugely popular, showing up the social media know-alls who predicted a white elephant. But the issue of public transport access to the centre is something that needs addressing. We report on the disabled people who are finding it hard to access the centre for hydro and physiotherapy because the nearest bus stop at Barfield Close is 200 yards away. We also have a story on the plans for St Luke's Church in Stanmore. It would be demolished and part of the site used for new council housing. The church would be rebuilt with badly needed community facilities which the estate lacks. This would appear at first sight to be an imaginative idea between the church and the local authority trying to balance those myriad of pressures. But the devil is always in the detail.
Thank you, Richard. Now, I've got an opinion piece written this week by Carly Daziz, and it's called Spare a Copper. It's not easy being a policeman, not sure it has ever been, but something now has got to give in the thin blue line. The revelations about the ghastly man who killed Sarah Everard, like the estimable Nick Robinson on Today programme, I see no reason to repeat his name, let him languish for the rest of his miserable life, were appalling. His abuse of position, using alleged COVID legislation to trick Sarah into his card by flashing his warrant card and then handcuffing her, just dreadful. More dreadful, though, is the disclosure that thousands of other policemen have been up to similar abuses of position, albeit, until proved differently, at a lower level of seriousness. Listening to a woman on the radio who reported an assault tell how the detective constable interviewing attempted to date her while giving her a statement just beggared belief. What was he thinking? Not much. The hapless senior officer from the Met lamely arguing that his punishment for a final written warning was the result of an independent process just didn't wash with most right-thinking people. The warning would have been expunged in 3 years. The case in point dated back over 7 years. Perhaps the officer in question has mended his ways. Or perhaps not. You can imagine that exposure to the worst of the human condition can corrupt, and no doubt corrupt absolutely. But is there any excuse? The police forces are institutionally corrupt? Well, who knows? What is sure that a few of us would like to be a senior policeman sorting out these issues. In Hampshire, we have recently had firm action taken against a bunch of misogynistic, racist officers in Basingstoke who should have known better. That decisiveness followed a forensic inquiry and the punishment pulled no punches. But a good case, well handled, while laudable, is not going to fix it with an increasingly incredulous and, in the case of many women, fearful public. To them, it looks as if the police are marking their own homework, and it simply will not do. Independence may well be a way forward. The police invariably say you have to be a police officer to appreciate, understand, and frankly implement a proper inquiry. They have a point. Certain forensic skills are needed, but skills can be learnt. What matters is that the police no longer examine their own. People of bold independence, and they exist, should be asked to step in where there are cases of misconduct. We must protect the identities of the accused. If we don't, we will end up having no police force or, as in the case of the US, have in places a breed of slack-jawed officers worthy of no more than their pay of $15 an hour. An independent process must be transparent. When the inquiry concludes, if the officer is found to be wanting, he should be named. And if there are sanctions, they should be justified by those responsible for conducting the inquisition. Such a course would mark a departure from tradition. The police won't like it, but if I read public opinion correctly, the police have forfeited the right to continue with processes clearly found wanting. In time, senior officers may even find the involvement of independent civilians helpful. The track record so far amounts to a real horlicks, and for any kind of public confidence to endure, there needs to be demonstrable change. None of this is to say there aren't thousands of policemen and women who are doing a really good job. I know we are more fortunate than most to be living in Hampshire, where almost every week I see a fantastic public service, well delivered from people we can rely on. We owe it to them to root out the bad apples and restore confidence in their service. Now, Roger's going to read an item which I think is very close to her heart.
Yes, indeed it is. It's a very heartwarming and pleasant piece to read. It's called Plenty to Enjoy, as half-term shows and workshops visit theatre. A Winchester theatre is offering a workshop and two shows for children during October half-term. The Theatre Royal Winchester will have a workshop for young people called Let's Explore and performances of Edward Lear's The Dong with the Luminous Nose and Julia Donlever and Axel Schiffler's Stickman. The workshop is being run by Playmakers, the community engagement and critical arm of the Play to the Crowd. This is for children involved in school years 2 to 11 and young people aged 19 to 25 can take part in a series of workers called Let's Explore. Let's Explore, that's far more clear. The series includes set and costume design for theatre, which is a practical work when young people will work with an experienced designer and explore a range of activities and skills to design their own set and costumes. Rehearsals and performing monologues will inspire a range of monologue rehearsals, exercises and performance techniques to help participants perform monologues for auditions and for performances. Write Your Own Plays will see young writers work with an experienced writer to explore a range of exercises and activities and skills to help them write their own scripts. Creating Plays with Others is a series which participants will work collaboratively to explore a range of their theatre skills to bring to the stage both existing plays and theatre stories. Playmakers Let's Explore sessions take place on October the 25th. The workshops cost £10 and can be booked via www.playmakers.org/join-in or by calling 1962 840 440. That's 01962 840 440. And the first show to be performed this October half term will be The Dong with a Luminous Nose on October the 26th and the 27th, with a huge and colourful cast of absurd and figurative puppets. the Don with a luminous nose, an absurd take on Edward Lear's nonsensical classic, exploring the difference between being a child and becoming an adult. A sequel to the well-known Jumble, this production seeks to stimulate children's imagination and to provoke audiences to start asking questions. Julia Donaldson and Axel Shifter's Stickman will be coming to the Theatre Royal at Winchester on October the 28th. This has been adapted for the stage by Freckle Productions. For more information on the Don with a Luminous Nose and the Stickleman, visit theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk. That's theatreroyalwinchester.co.uk.
Thank you, Ros. Now, as you probably know, Bill Garum gives us an alternative view of the news. We've got two items from him or her today, read by Richard and then Claire, please.
Yes, and the first one is winners of the city's Poetry Prize. The Winchester Poetry Festival announced its winners at the live poetry event last weekend. The 2021 Winchester Poetry Prize was presented to Leslie Saunders with her entry called The Starlings. She becomes the sixth winner of the prize, which attracted thousands of entries from around the world, with some coming from Australia, Nigeria and the USA. Unfortunately, Leslie was unable to attend the event in person, so she performed her winner poem on a video. Second prize was awarded to Laurie Bolger for her poem Gem, while Paula Bulf was awarded third prize for her entry Miscarriage. For the second year in a row, Imogen Cook was awarded the prize for the best poem by a poet living in Hampshire for her poem Frankenstein. The festival was held at the Discovery Centre in Winchester and was the culmination of a five-month programme of online and in-person events. This included events such as Things Being Various, featuring Irish poet and professor of poetry Paul Muldoon. Jacqueline Safra, poet and judge of this year's competition, said, "The poems submitted for this year's prize, especially the brilliant winners whose poems continue to move me through many readings, prove that we live in challenging, painful and even occasionally joyous times. But more importantly, they are testament to the truth that writing a poem is an act of courage as well as an act of skill and creativity."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Leaves of Hope in the Cathedral. A touring art installation is at Winchester Cathedral this month to reflect on the coronavirus pandemic. The installation, called The Leaves of the Trees, has been at Winchester Cathedral since October the 6th and will be there until November the 2nd. It has been created by sculptor Peter Walker to honour those who have died during the pandemic and to allow people to contemplate their own experiences and think about loved ones. The installation is made up of 5,000 steel leaves, with each leaf stamped with the word hope. The leaves are laid out on the floor of the cathedral, creating an impression of autumn leaves fallen from trees. The Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, said, "We are delighted to welcome this poignant installation by Peter Walker to Winchester Cathedral. I'm hoping that these fallen leaves will be a rich source of reflection, giving many the opportunity for a clearer view and a new perspective. With many of us feeling stripped back and aware of what has been lost in the past year, the installation will allow people to both honour those lost for the pandemic and look forward with a sense of togetherness and hope." Peter Walker said, "Steel has been chosen as the material for the leaves to remind us of our resilience and collective strength. As the artwork tours around the country, the steel will age, rust, and change colour, just as the leaves of trees do when they fall each year.
Thank you for that, Claire. And now we've got three items which refer to historical items of interest, starting with Ros, please.
Yes. This one is entitled, Plans Were About to Go Full Steam Ahead. It was good news for the Watercress line when plans to rebuild a line another 7 miles to Alton were announced. The exciting revelation was delivered to steam enthusiasts as they celebrated the 115th anniversary of the opening of the line on October the 4th, 1980. Thousands flocked to Horsford and Romsey to travel on the main line and admire the locomotives and see progress being made on the restoring of coaches and steam giants. Also on show was the only the only operating steam-prepared crane in the country, the net £35,000 worth of engine shed and the West Country City Class logo Swanage was in the middle of a 4-year rebuilding programme. And then finally, there were also rides on 100-year-old buses pulled by Shire horses.
Richard, please.
Stolen 60 years ago, Vase returns home. Stolen in the 1960s, the loot, is slowly returning back to its rightful owner. An ancient Greek vase, missing from Winchester College for almost 60 years, has returned to the school after being entered for a sale at an auction house in Sussex. The small Lekythos oil flask was made in Athens in the early 5th century BC and is painted with an image of the god Zeus seated on a throne. It forms part of a collection of around 100 Greek vases originally acquired for the school in the late 19th century. In the 1960s, about 15 vases were stolen from the school and sold to an antique dealer. They were then dispersed, with 7 being auctioned at Christie's in 1965. Through the painstaking detective work of John Faulkner, a former classics teacher at Winchester, 3 of the missing vases were located and returned to the school in 2001, 2002 and 2012. One of these had travelled as far as the Columbia Museum of Art, North Carolina, and others were found in Texas and Amsterdam. The college was alerted to the reappearance of the latest vase by Jasper Gaunt, a classical archaeologist and grandson of Walter Oakeshott, headmaster of Winchester from 1946 to 1954. Through the kind cooperation of the auction house and the vendor, the missing Lekythos has recently been returned to the school. The vase is now on display in Treasury, the college museum, and may also be viewed along with many of the other of the school's Greek artefacts.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
First of all, I apologise for my French pronunciation.
Glad I didn't get that.
Belmonds to sell portrait of Mistress of Charles II. A portrait of Louise Renée de Panoncourt de Corriel, Duchess of Portsmouth, 1649 to 1734, attributed to Henri Gascars, French, 1635 to 1701, was included in Belmonds Old Masters British and European Paintings auction on October the 12th. The oil on canvas measures 107 by 97 centimetres and shows the Duchess with a cupid. It was originally in a private collection in Gloucestershire from circa 1800, before it was sold by Lane Fine Art to the father of the present owner. It is estimated it's at £8,000 to £12,000. The Duchess has been painted by many established artists, including Sir Peter Lely, and several times by Gascoigne. She famously accompanied Henrietta Anne Stuart, Duchess of Orleans, sister of Charles II of Great Britain, and sister-in-law of Louis XIV of France, when Henrietta visited her brother in Dover in 1670. Henrietta's sudden death meant Louise was unprovided for, and Charles II appointed her a lady-in-waiting to his own queen, Catherine of Braganza. Louise, born into a noble family at the Château de Carolau near Brest, was introduced early to the French royal household in the hope that she may become one of Louise XIV's mistresses. Rumour had it that the French court may have selected Louise to fascinate Charles II, but there seems to be no evidence of that. When Charles did show favour, however, the French ambassador, Colbert de Croisy, and the Secretary of State, Henry Bennet, 1st Earl of Arlington, and his wife, supported her becoming his mistress. There is no doubt that the French envoy was keen for her to serve the interests of her native sovereign, and Louise seemed to have done exactly that, and, as a result, was showered with gifts and honours by Louis XIV, including being given a pair of earrings worth an astonishing £18,000, more than he ever gave to Charles' queen. Charles II, in return, was taken by her childlike beauty, and once she had a hold of him, her great cleverness and strong will, Louise was careful to show the Queen every respect, and their relationship was always amicable, and so it may not be a surprise that her son, Charles, 1672 to 1723, was created Duke of Richmond in 1675. In 1673, she was granted the titles Baroness Petersfield, Countess of Fareham, and Duchess of Portsmouth for life. These came with a pension and allowances, and in 1681 alone, she received £136,000. Charles II also requested her inclusion in the peerage of France, and she became the Duchess of Aubigny in 1673. Although disliked by the people in England and Charles' other mistress, Nell Gwynne, she retained her hold on him to the end and was instrumental in helping Charles II find a solution to the longitude problem, which ultimately resulted in the establishment of the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. Charles called her affectionately Fubs, due to her being a little chubby, which was very much en vogue at the time. And in 1682, the royal yacht HMY Fubs was named in her honour. In 1685, she ensured that Charles II was received into the Catholic Church on his deathbed, and Louise was certainly one of three women in his life, along with the Queen and Nell Gwynne. Louise retired to France shortly after Charles's death, having fallen out of favour, and only returned to England twice, the last time for the coronation of George I. And underneath there's the www.bellmans.co.uk. A bit more, perhaps, about it.
Yes. Thank you for that, Claire. Right, well, before we go on to the items of general news, I know that you're all waiting for the lighting up times. So I won't make you wait any longer. The sun, if there is any, will rise at about 7:30 a.m. and might set again at about 6:15 p.m. Right, well, on to items of general news. Roz, can you give us the first story, please?
Yes, I certainly can. Jailed robbers told to pay just £1. Two men who raided an elderly woman's home and stole thousands of pounds worth of family heirlooms, including a military cross medal, have just been ordered to pay £1 each. Eric's Valance, 23, and Jed Martin, 27, bound an elderly woman to her stairs, threw a pillowcase over her face while they ransacked her house in Leckford near Stockbridge. The gang stole cash and jewellery, including a Cartier ring, an Omega watch, three-string pearl necklace and David Morris pearl and diamond necklace with matching earrings. They also took her father-in-law's military cross medal from the Second World War with a letter signed by King George. None of the items were ever recovered. As reported, each were jailed for 10 years at Winchester Crown Court on April the 8th after they admitted to an offence robbery which took place on March the 23rd last year. Following the sentencing hearing, proceedings were commenced under Proceedings of the Crime Act, POCA, 2002, to recover the funds Martin, formerly of Evenglade Road, Southampton, and Valance, formerly of Cotswold Road, Southampton, had obtained from offending. At the hearing on September the 30th, it was ruled that the total benefit figure for each of their offending was £231.148, but the total available amount was deemed to be zero. The court decided that a nominal £1 charge could be ordered for both, which must be paid within 28 days or 7-8 days imprisonment in default. However, if any assets are recovered, the case can be redeemed by the prosecution to seek an order in a higher sum. The sentencing hearing nearly earlier this year heard that their elderly victim, Susan Hunt, was woken by masked men at around 2:30 a.m, shining a torch into her face. They then walked her down the stairs, putting black tape around her hands, tying her to the banister before putting a pillowcase over her head. How appalling. Mm.
Service held to celebrate new hospice. Winchester Cathedral held a service recently to celebrate the opening of the city's new hospice. The service, held on October the 4th, celebrated the opening and thanked everyone who helped to make the Winchester Hospice a reality. There was also opportunity for attendees to hear more about the future for specialist hospice care for Winchester and the surrounding villages, as well as how to continue to support the hospice in providing outstanding patient care. Steve Bryan, MP, attended alongside the Lord Lieutenant, Mayor of Winchester, and all the team who will run the Winchester's first adult hospice. Mr. Bryan said, "I'm so proud of what's been achieved here and the quality of our new facility. Having seen it as a derelict building, as a building site and every stage in between, it's very special to see the finished article. I know the service it will provide will be of comfort to so many people over the years, and I keep the team in my prayers always." Nick Vaughan, chairman of the Winchester Hospice Appeal, said, "The opening of the Winchester Hospice has been a huge milestone that will enable the fantastic staff at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust to continue to provide outstanding patient care to those who need it most." Dr. Lara Alloway, consultant in palliative medicine and chief medical officer at the Trust, said, "Winchester Hospice will play an invaluable role within the community. We know how important local hospice care is for those people with life-limiting conditions, as well as for their friends and family. I am delighted we can now provide this care and support close to their homes."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Tudor building available for rent at £115,000 a year.
Oh.
A Winchester restaurant building is available for rent. Savills, on behalf of a private client, is marketing the former Loch Fyne restaurant on Drury Street, which closed during the lockdown. The guide rent is £115,000 per annum. The Grade 2 listed character restaurant offers about 4,526 square feet, that's 420 square metres, of space across ground and first floor trading areas. On the ground floor, there is a bar servery with fireplace, small trade area, storage, and two flights of stairs leading to the first floor restaurant. There is a basement and a modern extension to the rear of the property. In total, the restaurant and trading areas can accommodate approximately 150 covers. There is also a central courtyard with outdoor seating for approximately 26. Chris Bickle, director in the licensed leisure team at Savills, Southampton, said, "This is arguably one of Winchester's most loved and historic restaurant properties. It has an abundance of original character features whilst benefiting from contemporary ancillary space."
Thank you, Claire. This item is headed New Name of Beacon as Shelter Expands Its Services. Staff, residents and supporters of Winchester Church's Night Shelter launched the charity's new working name, the Winchester Beacon. They gathered on Sunday to mark World Homeless Day and the name change. Michelle Price, Chief Executive, said, "When we were founded over 30 years ago by Churches Together, we were very much a traditional winter night shelter. Over the years, we have evolved and grown our service to ensure that we meet the needs of our residents. Changes accelerated during the pandemic when the charity became a 24-hour service so that residents could stay on site all day and night when other services closed their doors. Bedrooms have been changed to single rooms to reduce shared airspace. Both of these changes have had such a positive impact on residents that they have been made permanent." Ms. Price added, "The pandemic gives us an opportunity to do things differently. Being open all day has given our residents more stability and the opportunity to access more of our personalised support. Single rooms have given our residents the privacy and dignity they so need during these challenging times." The name Night Shelter no longer accurately describes its services. Another reason for the change has been feedback from residents who say the name Night Shelter can conjure up worrying images and has been a barrier to some people seeking help from the charity. There is also stigma and shame attached to the term Night Shelter for some. "We have spent many months consulting with residents, staff and supporters to find a new name which better reflects the far-reaching service that we provide," explains Michelle. "The Winchester Beacon was chosen as we know that we bring hope and the opportunity to escape homelessness. Our beacon shines so brightly thanks to our wonderful community of supporters and staff working passionately behind the scenes. On World Homeless Day, supporters, residents and staff gathered to take a moment to think of all those faced with homelessness. Candles were lit up the steps to the door of the Winchester Beacon to symbolise the path that the charity offers out of homelessness."
Trapped in own home by dangerous wall. A Winchester woman has described being trapped in her own house because of a dangerous wall. Emily Miles of Maytree Close Badger Farm was told in February 2020 that she couldn't use her garden or garage because of the wall. The property is one of several on Maytree Close which has been affected by this, with at least 8 not being able to use their garages and their gardens, and three unable to use their garden. This has been especially difficult for Emily, has 2 children and suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, having served in the armed forces for 4 years. Emily says, "We had a meeting regarding the situation recently, and I actually cried to the housing officer. I suffer with PTSD. I can't understand why they won't move me to a different property. They refuse to do that. The wall is about 5.5 metres high, and it has come away from the garages, so it's only being held up by the ivy. Her property is owned by A2 Dominion, and however, the wall is owned by a private tenant." Emily said the garage block is privately owned, so the person who owns it is responsible for the wall. They got a quote to do the wall, and it was £20,000. The tenant won't spend that money. "I have been put in another house list because apparently my house is still available, even though I've had a garage or garden for the last 18 months in that condition. An A2 Dominion gave us £100 as a goodwill gesture, but no compensation. I've been to the Royal British Legion, as they were the ones who actually helped to get this property, and they said I should never have been allowed to move in with the unsafe wall. They actually told me to call social services because the wall is a damage to the children." Dawn Whiting, Director of Housing in A2 Dominion Eakes, said, "I expect this is a very frustrating situation for all involved, and we'd like to assist their residents that we are sorry I'd like to assist our residents, but there are dangers in where we want to resolve it. Unfortunately, the wall is a question in question is not the property of A2 Dominics, so we cannot carry out the required repair for ourselves. We, however, made it clear that we were very willing to contribute to the cost. The owners of the wall have not yet been engaged with the local authority, despite efforts to facilitate a meeting to discuss the issue, and their progress can be made until this has happened. In the meantime, we are sending our own structural engineer to look at the wall in the next 2 weeks so that we can better understand the current situation for our residents. We have proved that the residents do write the details of how they can apply to move if they wish, and we are willing to support them if that is their preferred option."
Pure unnecessary greed, scheme granted. A contentious planning application for a village site branded Pure Unnecessary Greed has been approved by planners. J Squared Property Limited proposed to build 4 houses on a plot where a bungalow has been demolished on Boyne Rise, Kingsworthy. Permission has already been granted for 3 homes, but an earlier scheme for 4 homes was rejected, both by the planning committee and by an inspector on appeal earlier this year. Kingsworthy Parish Council objected to the new proposal, and there were objections from 18 local households, citing overdevelopment and traffic issues. Addressing the planning committee last month, neighbour Terry Foley, of Boyne Rise said, "This is pure unnecessary greed. These houses are not going to be much-needed housing, but will be priced out of the range of first-time buyers." Councillor Colin Crossburn of the Parish Council said it was out of keeping with the character of the area. Caroline Gould, agent for the scheme, said the principle of the development had been established and several of the previous problems had been addressed. The footprint of the proposed buildings was smaller than the previous two schemes, she said. Local City Councillor Jane Rutter remains opposed. This is the third time this has come to the planning committee. Originally it was for 5 dwellings, then 4. It was turned down and then turned down by a planning inspector. Then they came forward for 3, which was accepted, reluctantly. It was just about acceptable in terms of access and traffic. Now the developer comes back and asks for more. 4 is too many on this site. The developer is greedily looking for one more. One more tips it from being just about acceptable to unacceptable, added Councillor Rutter. She said residents in Boyne Rise had endured 10 years of infill development with chronic disruption to their lives from building work. But the planning committee voted by 6-3 to approve the application.
Endangered zebra foal born in front of zoo visitors. A little bit different. Visitors to Marwell Zoo were treated to the sight of a rare zebra foal being born. The endangered Grevy's zebra gave birth to a healthy foal at the zoo's Wild Explorers paddock in front of amazed onlookers. Keepers carefully monitored the zebra from a distance and answered questions from guests, while first-time mother Ellen gave birth in just 30 minutes. Both mother and foal, whose name and gender are still to be confirmed, are doing very well. Marwell Zoo's hoofstock team leader, Tim Rowland, said, "Zebra normally like to do their own thing and take themselves away, so giving birth in the middle of the afternoon in front of a crowd of guests isn't common. But she wasn't concerned by the interest, and it was a very smooth delivery, with the healthy foal arriving in around 30 minutes. The foal is enjoying exploring, though is still staying close to its mother, who is the dominant female of the herd and is being very protective. The Grevy's zebra is one of Africa's rarest large mammals."
Inquest opened into death of Major General Holmes. The former head of the Royal Marines was found dead at his home following concerns about his marriage and his career, an inquest opening heard. Major General Matthew Holmes was discovered hanging at his home in Kingsgate Road, Winchester, on Saturday, October the 2nd. An inquest was opened into his death by area coroner Jason Pegg at Winchester Coroner's Court on Tuesday. Mr. Pegg said it was suspected that Major General Holmes had concerns at the time of his death surrounding his marriage and his service career. The coroner said that Major General's body was formally identified by his wife, Leah. The inquest was also told that there was an incident at the Major General's home to which police were called on September the 22nd. No more details were given. A post-mortem by consultant pathologist gave a cause of death of hanging. Mr. Pegg adjourned the hearing for reports from various people and organisations, including the Major General's wife, his sister Sarah, along with several from the Royal Marines. A full inquest will take place on February the 10th next year, and the funeral service for Major General Holmes was due to take place in Winchester Cathedral yesterday, that is Wednesday, as the Chronicle went to press. A memorial page has been set up in tribute. To visit the page, go to matthewholmes.muchloved.com. He commanded 42nd Commando Royal Marines from 2006 to 2008 and was appointed a Companion of the Distinguished Service Order for his leadership in operations in Afghanistan in 2007. He was also awarded a CBE in 2019 and has been described as one of our most senior and highly decorated Royal Marines.
Scheme set for official opening. Winchester City Chiefs plan to have an official opening of the New Valley development to coincide with the centenary of the Stanmore estate. The Valley Scheme has seen 77 new council homes on former open space between the Valley and Battery Hill. Councillor Jamie Scott, himself a councillor tenant, questioned why there had been no official opening since this scheme was finished in the summer. Councillor Kelsey Learney, Cabinet Minister for Housing, answered at council. The Valley development was substantially completed and handed over from the contractor from June to July. The official opening was originally planned for August. However, landscape works had not yet been completed and two tenants had reported defect issues which had needed further investigation and re-certification to ensure that it was not a site-wide issue. She added, it is planned to link the official opening of the scheme with the centenary of 100 years of council housing in Winchester, in the first housing being built by Cromwell in 19... No, that can't be right. Excuse me, I'm going a little bit back. A celebration of 100 years of council housing in Winchester. The first housing being built in Cromwell Road in 1921 and opened by the Prince of Wales, later Edward VIII. I got really excited about that bit there and it just read completely wrong. However, you do have the right details now. I'm so sorry, everyone. With efforts focused on completing the largest scheme to be delivered through a council's new home programme to date, including signing up new tenants and resolving the issues referred to above, there has been a short delay in organising an event befitting the significant achievement of the completion of 71 affordable houses and flats for Winchester restarts where now planned for autumn 2021.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. Before we go, just another reminder that Liz Legree is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her contact number again is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And don't forget that if you do have problems with the box, please make sure that you have plugged it in and charged it up, because that is sometimes the problem. Well, thanks to all our support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors, Gordon and Liz Legg, and of course, many thanks to our readers today. Roz?
Goodbye.
Richard?
Goodbye.
Claire?
Bye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye.